Welcome to Equestrian Movement's Best Do No Harm podcast. I'm your host, Katie Boniface, co-founder of Equestrian Movement with Sarah Gallagher. We work with horse riders who want to build a stronger bond and a deeper connection with their horses. In our first Do No Harm podcast, we discuss with other industry professionals how to work with horses to firstly do no harm and secondly support their mental, emotional and physical well-being throughout the training process, so that we have horses that enjoy learning and ask to be ridden. Each episode, we discuss the different influences our training can have and how we can improve our horses' overall athleticism, soundness of mind and body, and emotional fortitude, while strengthening and deepening our relationship with our horses. Each week, I will endeavour to bring to you a new episode on horse riding, training, handling and husbandry, or an interview with other industry professionals to help you address where and why you might get stuck in creating the beautiful union of dancing souls that is the equestrian sport. Are you ready to kick off today's show? Let's get started. Thanks for joining us for episode 2 with Kate McGawley from Smiling Horse LLC. I'm so excited to continue this conversation with you. I will link up all of the links in the show notes. If you're listening and you're enjoying what you're hearing, make sure you tag us over on Instagram and share with us your biggest aha moments. We love getting the feedback from you about the different types of training and information that you love hearing about and the types of little gems that you can get from these conversations. Without further ado, let's continue with today's episode. It's been interesting trying to, you know, run a riding school from a place of consent-based willingness with the horses, because they have so many different people on them and all the people move differently and all of the people have different goals and things that they are trying to achieve with their riding. And so anybody that comes in that does it, that has their own personal goals to tick the box off of and isn't coming in for, like, you know, basically equine assisted learning, I reckon, like anybody that's not coming in with the horse's best interest at heart and without respect for the horse being its own animal, they just don't stay, which is nice.
That's really nice.
We have a really lovely, like, bunch of people who are learning how to work with the horse from a consent-based and willing perspective. And it's interesting because I feel like, you know, the horse industry has changed so much. We've come so far in relation to how we can, you know, understand these things from a science-based nature. But then the riding schools themselves seem to have gone further away from that trajectory. Like, it's just become a money-making system where, you know, you do have to know where that income is coming from so that you can keep the school and you don't sink it. But when you forget why you're doing it is for the horse, then I'm seeing, like, so many people rushed through their development. And the biggest problem is that they're not being taught how to wire their body incorrectly the first time around and developing that body awareness. So you're always going to get stuck in your progress if that initial wiring process does not allow you to move with the horse in balance. And because so many people are, like, rushed into a group because that's, like, where the money is in the group, then, you know, they don't get taught how to find their balance independent of the horse and follow the movement of the horse. They just get taught how to not fall off, and that creates, like, a really defensive riding posture that gets you stuck when you're trying to go faster, jump higher, stretch your goals. You have to basically relearn how to rewire your body to be able to progress if you've, like, locked yourself into just trying to stay on the horse.
You know, that's interesting. I was talking to a friend of mine and she runs a lesson program, and she was saying, you know, how kids these days, at least in her program, she's noticed a lot of them aren't interested in hanging out at the barn and just messing with the horses and being engaged with the horses. They're there more as like a hobby. And she was telling me it's the majority of her client base that are that way. And to me, like growing up as a barn rat, I mean, I begged my mom to drive me to the barn at 6 o'clock in the morning every day. You know, like didn't leave till 9 at night. Like that's just so wild to me. Because I don't know, I've just been so passionate about it my whole life. I don't know. And you like all your what you're talking about right now is like you have to have the desire, because it's hard work. It's hard work developing a correct seat. It's hard work developing the balance. It's hard work doing all that. And these, I think, like you said, it's you know, you said this, the kids that aren't interested in all of that, they leave. But I think a lot of the time too, the industry has kind of made room for these kids who just want to go show up, ride the horse, and then leave. And I don't really know if I don't really have any answers, I guess, to that problem, but it's just interesting to talk about.
Yeah, for sure. It is a very different set of kids that I'm working with now than what I worked with like 15, 20 years ago when I first started at the riding school. Like, yeah, it would be 20 years ago. You have to work a lot harder as a coach now with regard to just teaching kids how to use their body and to find their balance. I think that a lot of kids these days maybe don't get as much physical like movement with understanding
Right,
their
yeah.
body in their life. Even for me, with my son, like just getting him out and using his body and whatnot can feel a bit tough. And we have a beach hut up in Townsville where I grew up, and we went up there for a holiday last term, and we have these like rocks at the front of the hut down to the beach to stop the washout. And just watching him the first day trying to scale those rocks, like he was slipping and he was cutting his knee open, and I was like, no, don't die. Don't like have a boulder crush you. And
Yeah.
then by the third day of like scaling, and initially I was very, protective of him and being like, be careful, like, make sure you're picking your steps. He's 4 as well, so he doesn't have cognition to know what I was talking about.
Oh.
But by the third day, he was like really confidently scaling up and down those rocks without like really needing a lot of supervision, knowing, what rocks are
Yeah.
going to be unstable and what rocks are going to be secure. I think just in general, it's like really hard to create these like movement opportunities for our children. And so I find myself teaching like just. I really have to break movement down to be very specific, like body awareness, muscle movements, because the kids' bodies aren't moving intuitively anymore that to like find their own balance.
Yeah, that's really interesting.
Yeah, don't have an answer for that one either.
Yeah. It's wild to think about though, because I mean it's not far off. I think a lot of the time, kids are raised on smartphones and not necessarily exploring things on their own, and I think that probably plays a huge role
Yeah.
in,
And just
body awareness.
not having, spaces for them to explore
Yeah.
their body and that kind of thing as well. Their body and movement is a big thing. But I wouldn't even know. Maybe I could enroll in gymnastics or something like
Yeah.
that.
Yeah, maybe so.
Definitely not a gymnast body type, more of a rugby player.
That's a rough sport right there.
Yeah, he's down for a good wrestle.
Oh.
So one of the things that you were talking about, we always are learning that we should be, getting our horses respect and setting boundaries with our horses. But one of the things we don't realize is that our horses are setting boundaries with us, and quite often the things that we interpret as disrespectful is really, you know, linked back to something that we've done that the horse sees as disrespectful themselves and is trying to set boundaries with. And it gets the only way that the horses have to communicate is through behavior.
Right. And it's so important too, because I think the horse does need a really safe place to express his boundaries, but there's also an aspect of we need to be safe as well. And I think finding the middle ground is really showing your horse that you listen and you're there. And that way those big behavior responses that are usually pretty dangerous can become pretty mild when they know you're listening. So they already have a sense of security with you. One, and two, when you're hyper aware of what's going on with them, they know that, and then they have very subtle behavior responses. You know, instead of the big blow up in the cross ties because they're scared of something, whatever, they look concerned, but you know, you can kind of catch them when that's going on and reassure. And you can kind of stop a whole big situation from getting dangerous just by being present, by just being aware, you know. And that's something that that requires work on our part as people, apart from the horses, to be at a secure and safe place enough within ourselves to be present, because being present is very difficult.
Oh, for sure. So hard. We have one of our mares who is just a gun at mind wandering. She's so good at it. She'll pull me into it with her. And I'll snap out of it 15 minutes later, and I'll be like, oh, Jesus, I'm supposed to be teaching you. Like, we've just gone into an alternate reality together. It's gone into our happy state.
That's so funny.
So having the mind wandering happen is normal. It's natural. It's like, what our body is built to do, because it helps us pay attention to our environment and not like get so caught up in the present, basically, to protect ourselves from the threat in our environment. It's just being able to catch that your mind is wandering and being able to call your focus back into your body. And then doing the same for the horse, is being able to catch that their mind is wandering and being able to call their focus back onto you and say, hey, like, I'm still on your back. I'd like you to be thinking about me a little bit so that you're not making bad choices for us. One of the books I was reading was called Peak Mind, and the like most basic exercise that she had for developing focus was to like sit for 15 minutes and like call your focus back to yourself when you catch your mind wandering. And it was the most excruciating 15 minutes of my life, but I haven't done it again since. I'm really going to have to find myself to be able to.
That sounds so challenging.
We did that with their kids as well. So we were practicing it. I just wanted to do for a short period of time, because she said, like, without actually training your brain like a muscle, you can only do it for a minute. And so I said that, and it's like so true to like these kids' natures. One was like, took it as a challenge straight away. And so she like tried to hyperfixate focus, and then she like brain went off on a tangent and started talking about something else. And then the other girl was like, that was 45 seconds. As soon as I'd said that, she had started counting to see like how long before people started to lose their focus. And that was like so true to her. And then one of the other girls was like, what are we doing?
Broad spectrum of responses there.
And so, you know, focus is such a big thing when we're working with our horses. If we want our horses to stay engaged in work and keep their focus and their attention on us, like, we have to be able to do the same for them. And half the time I'm watching my students and they're like looking out, seeing what's going on in the paddock, watching horses running around, and so their brain isn't on the horse. So of course the horse's brain isn't on them.
Yes. You know, I think it's really important to just notice, like you're saying, just notice when that happens, because if you're not, your horse is definitely not focused, you know. And I mean, I've sat on horses so much in my life where you know, you go to get on them and they don't even acknowledge you're there. You know, they're just so used to the job, or they're so used to not really mentally engaging. They're used to the feeling of you and they listen, but there's no connection involved at all. And, you know, that was one of the things that kind of transitioning to a lot more positive reinforcement belt.
Yeah.
That's what really taught me what true connection looks like when you're riding. It brings you back to like when you were a kid and you were just riding around bareback and just, you know, back to your roots in a very grounding way. When the whole saying of like, you know, when you're on a horse and you're one entity, that's what it's one thing to ride well, and it's a whole nother thing to connect and ride well, you know.
Yeah, 100%. That was like, you know, the more I went down this route of trying to find, you know, a place within the industry as a professional, the more it took me away from that. Like, I really got that with my third horse, who was just so terrified that I couldn't do anything with him. And I really had to like pay a lot of attention to the subtleties of his movement, because it took a lot, like, for him to trust my movement, for him to allow me to do things with him.
Yeah.
And then when I was like working towards my instructor's coaching qualifications and whatnot, it was always like, be scarier than the thing that they're scared of, like punish them, you can't have them, you know, do things basically because that makes them unsafe. But, you know, really where that lack of safety is our fear of them. And so when you have that quality of connection, then you feel safe with them, because that you can feel they don't want to hurt you. It's treating them like they're a flight animal and punishing them into behaving that makes them unpredictable, which is what is scary. When you treat them as an equal and you develop that connection with them, they're still going to startle. Like, they have zero control over that, the same way we have zero control over startling. But we're going to have a horse that's actively trying to look after us, and if we can pay attention to their thresholds and not face them, then it's a much safer horse than one that we've just like pushed and pressured and punished into performance for us.
Yes. I actually posted a video relatively recently of I was just riding him bareback and he was playing, almost made me cry, because this horse can be so reactive. Him actually enjoying him, and it just made me so happy. And I, at the minutes of the ride, he was freaking brilliant and just, you know, having fun, and you know, he, like you said, they still startle. You're not guaranteed safety because you're connected with your horse. That's an illusion. You're never guaranteed safety. No matter how much you sit there and punish and you know, create shut down horses that give you the desired behavior, nothing is guaranteed. And I think that's what so many people are wanting. They're wanting that guaranteed safety or that sense of security or control. And when you're working with other people, that it can become toxic pretty quickly when, you know, your only grasp at what you're doing is control or safety, because none of it's guaranteed. None of it's guaranteed at all. And I think we have to be very careful when working with horses, when we grip on to safety. You have to watch out for our own safety, but to hold on to that like it's guaranteed is, I think it's a dangerous way to think when you're working with a living being, and it can put you in a position to punish or cause harm.
Yeah, and try and control. It definitely is one of those things where, you know, I'll have students that think that I'm just like really brave, like, how am I sitting on these horses? All that kind of stuff. And before I had my son, I was really like, you know what, if this is how I die, I'm gonna die happy. I'm doing what I love.
Yeah.
And you can, you know, you have more of a risk of injuring yourself or death, like driving a car, than you do with the horses. So
yeah,
we're putting ourselves in these environments and situations all the time. It's just that when we're on the horse, we can be quite aware when the horse is not actively participating or actively saying no to us, and what that can escalate to. And so I think, you know, sometimes it's like you really have to just have faith that this is what is going to happen, and this is going to be the best for all of us. But yeah, in saying that, you know, there's a place of naivety in some people where they don't know how bad it can go. So we really want to have an awareness of when the horse is telling us that they're getting close to threshold or they're tipping over. Mm-hmm. We really want to have an awareness of if a horse is in that state of shutdown and not actively engaging, because that's where like a lot of the problems happen, is that we think it's a safe bomb-proof horse, but really it's just shut down. And then it seems like the behavior comes out of nowhere because we haven't built in the psychological safety for the horse to be able to communicate that they're starting to feel anxious and upset. They're just internally experiencing it and not able to express it to us. And so then they get to that point where that internal environment is so overwhelming that they can't control themselves anymore. And that's when we're going to see that really explosive, dangerous behavior. So if we can like give them permission to find tools that they can communicate these things to us without it becoming a behavior, then we de-escalate a lot of behaviors. But that's not really appreciated in the industry very much yet, because a horse that says no is a naughty horse, and so you have to push them through it, you have to make them do it. But it's the same situation as like a horse that has the confidence to say no is not going to put you in a situation where you're going to get hurt.
Yep. And I think too, you know, those shutdown horses, when somebody like me or you gets a hold of them and they suddenly have permission to actually have emotion, it can be kind of a it can be kind of a wild thing, you know, because all of a sudden this, you know, broke quote unquote horse is quite the bronc, or quite the wild man, you know. And I think too, like, there is a stage with these horses where, like, when they're suddenly allowed to just be a horse again, it's a lot of retraining. It's a lot of redoing things, because your horse never was truly broke. Your horse was just shut down. And I always stand by this. I think, because that's what the definition of learned helplessness is those horses that are just shut down. And I think horses in learned helplessness are created by people in learned helplessness. And I think that kind of goes back to like the hunger for control, which is safety. Control is safety. That's what that means for a lot of people. And finding the balance within yourself as a person is going to be the deciding factor on if you're even able to train a horse through ethical means without causing him to shut down. Because I think a lot of that that hunger for safety is actually what causes or allows people to treat horse poorly, is that thing. You know, people want to demonize all these people that maybe just struggle with regulating, and I'm not sitting here you know, agreeing with their toxic behavior towards horses at all. But I think that's their internal reality. That's what the horse is. The horse is just an internal reality of its trainer. And if we're going to be, you know, here for the welfare of the horse, we definitely have to be here also for the welfare of the person. And that's a very difficult thing, because people are crazy and they do dumb stuff, you know. Like, some people are terrible to their horses, but even giving those people grace, I mean, that's the hardest thing. That's the hardest thing to do, because you're like, what are you doing, you dummy? Why are you doing this? But that's really how they treat themselves. And you have to come from a place of kindness and empathy even towards them.
Yeah.
Ooh, that's challenging. That's challenging.
It is. It really is. I definitely agree with you there. Yeah, that's its own thing, isn't it? I have a really funny story. So, we just purchased the school here 4 months ago, and honestly, this has been the biggest experience of my life, like the most hardest, most challenging thing I've been through. We had to like subdivide our property to sell off the block and the house to be able to afford here. And thankfully, my partner is quite handy and did a lot of that. And I was just teed up to do some video with one of the horses I had on breaking, and our bridging loan was just about to go through. And because we hadn't sold our property in time to purchase here, so it was, everything was up in the air. I was like, are we going to be able to go ahead with buying a property and have a school, or is all of this going to dissolve and I've got nothing?
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. And then if the bridging loan goes through, we have to sell within like a certain period of time. Otherwise, like the bank takes everything basically. And I was like,
wow,
such a state of like just anxiety and stress over the whole thing. Like I basically have neuralgia from it. And I was trying to do a training video with one of the horses I had on breaking, and bless her, like she was so good. She was trying so hard not to respond to the level of panic that was in my body. I was like, this video is going to be so good because you'd be able to see like all the tension that my body was holding, and I just had zero control of downregulating myself into that place of relaxation. And she was trying very hard not to react to
so sweet.
Yeah, she's adorable. Yeah, and that's gonna be, you know, quite a fun video to show. But one of those things, like when we're working with the students, you know, letting go of control, and they're having to have the whole conversation with the seat, and they're not allowed to pick up the reins to touch the horse's mouth to have that conversation. There's a lot of pre-work that goes into that. Like, firstly, they have to just, you know, not be naive to the fact that the horse could react and take off with them, because then I'm not setting up a safe lesson plan for the students. And then secondly, they have to have an awareness of how much they can injure themselves on the horse and let go of control. And you know, you have to be able to have that felt sense of safety like within yourself for it to transmit to the horse, and the horse has to have that felt sense of safety within themselves for them to not become reactive in the saddle. And then you have to be able to have trust and confidence in the horse, and the horse has to be able to have trust and confidence in you. And you have to be able to draw their focus and their attention onto you and off other things. Like, you have to figure out a way of how you're going to mentally engage them in that conversation. And you need to be able to have some degree of capacity to co-regulate the horse and down-regulate them with your breath. And then you're also looking for that integration of movement, so the horse is even paying attention to your seat. Like, that's a lot for a human to do. It's a lot for a horse. It's a lot for a human to do. And you can see how, like, without those fundamental elements of that quality of connection, you are just going to rely on the bit and ride the horse mechanically, like it's a bike or a car or something like that, assuming that the bit is going to make the horse stop. But the trick to horse riding is that a horse is only going to do what it's thinking. And so we need to be able to check in with their brain and get them thinking about the thing that we want them to do. And then we need to be able to make it their choice. And so if you think that stopping your horse is going to work just by pulling their mouth, like, none of my horses think stop because the kid like braces its body and pulls their mouth. Like, they just grab back because all they're thinking about is the kid on their back that's like braced in fear and holding, and the piece of metal that's getting pulled in their back. They're not thinking, oh, the child is trying to communicate stop.
There's
all of these other responses that the horse is giving to that experience.
Yes. And I think horse training can be extremely mindless without those tools and without the presence of mind it takes to regulate yourself and help your horse regulate. There's so many things going on at once that you really need all the help you can get. And I think a large part of it is just not expecting perfection all the time, and just like you were saying, it's just not being unaware that, you know, safety is not always guaranteed. And I think that's a great thing for, you were just telling me you're teaching your kids, is just, you know, for them to be aware, not to like cause them to be fearful of it, but just to be comfortable with the truth. You know what I mean? I think that's very, very, very important, is just to be comfortable with the truth. And that's what horses bring out in people, I think, is just the truth.
Yeah.
Because they are mirrors. They'll tell on you, man. They'll tell on you when you're struggling with stuff.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
That's what's so beautiful about them.
Yeah, that was one of my like first lesson plans that I used to do when I first started teaching people on their own properties. Like, the horses can't lie. So anything
No.
that they're communicating, is gonna be an expression of their truth and how they're experiencing us. We can lie. Like, we have to put the face on and go to work, you know, go to the shops, engage with people that we don't necessarily like, you know, deal with situations that don't make us feel good and don't make us happy. We can put the face on, but we forget to read what's underneath the face. And so being able, especially like the older you get, I feel like the easier you get at the face with that you show everybody else, whereas like kids kind of are in there as well, where they're always showing their truth as well. But being able to understand what's underneath the face, what's that internal environment, a lot of adults don't have that connection to their internal environment because that internal environment can be so uncomfortable.
Yeah, I think that's so true. I think, you know, I've been reading here recently a lot about attachment styles and how that's developed in childhood. And it really does help kind of understand the outlook on horses and outlook on people. And, you know, it's so interesting because I think horses are a little bit closer to like children. Obviously they're cognitively different, but there's some similarities in taking some of the things I've learned with just like attachment theory and applying it. It definitely helps, because I mean we're working with horses, but the reality is a lot of it is working with people too. And horses are not the hard part. It's navigating their people, you know. And I don't know, I feel like you have to go through a certain level of healing to be able to work with people, because people we lose that self-awareness because of our pain, because of our trauma, because of what we've been through. And it takes even more pain to face it.
Yeah.
And not everybody's wired that way. Like for me, I'm very wired that way. Like I want to face my problems. I don't shrink back from stuff like that. So I have a hard time relating to people who maybe, you know, don't want to face their issues. So I kind of struggle to relate that way. But I think that's so much of what it is, though, is just facing it. You know what I mean? And that's the definition of presence, the definition of truth. And if we want to be there for our horses, we absolutely have to first be there for ourselves. Because, you know, if we're the kind of person that, you know, beats ourselves up at all of our mistakes, that's going to come out in your horse training. That's going to come out in how you respond to people. That's going to come out in how you respond to your kids. How do you respond to your spouse? You know, and it all starts internally with us. So, you know, you were just talking about earlier is, people get into animal training in general. Because, I'm an animal person. I don't do good with people.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it's like, well, you know, you might need to do some work on yourself there, because everything flows from us. It's us first and then everything else. That's why, like, our triggers are all our responsibility. You know, we have to take ownership of a lot of those things. And that's what empowers us to become better horse trainers and at the most surface level, you know what I mean? Better people in general, but horse trainers.
Thanks for joining us for today's conversation with Kate. Our final installment of our conversation will conclude next week. I will have all of the links in the show notes where you can follow up and continue this conversation with Kate. As always, if you've taken away a gem in your training or a piece of information that you've found particularly helpful, we'd love for you to share this episode and share the aha moment and tag us in it. Until next week, happy trails. If you're loving what you're listening to on the podcast, you might be starting to recognize that trying to control your horse through submission-based training is the worst way to ask your horse to look after you. If you're working with or riding horses, you know how unpredictable and sometimes scary they can be. Unfortunately, most struggling horse riders make the mistake of thinking they can physically control their 400 plus kilo fur babies by moving their feet or spooking them into responding with flags and join up. Without giving your horse a reason to care about you and look after you, you will most likely end up with a horse that is disconnected at best, shut down or explosive at worst, because they can't communicate their needs with you, especially if you are already scared, worried or nervous handling your horse. That's why we've created our new free online training experience, Building a Connection with Your Horse. This is how I've gone about creating safe horses for beginners, no matter the breed or previous handling experiences. If you want to learn the secret sauce behind developing safe horses that care about you and look after you without trauma-triggering training methods, register for our new training today at www.equestrianmovement.com/connection. And I will uncover the three big mistakes you might be making if you're trying to build a relationship with your horse, and how you can start building your horse's trust and confidence in you as a leader worth following.